This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hello, and welcome to Long Shots here on the VSiN Podcast Network. It is the Olympics 2024 edition. Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin coming to you. And guys, it is a short field. It is a tough course. It is a course we have seen before. That said, maybe not necessarily in its current form that we are going to see for the Olympics, but a fun thing to handicap regardless. While it is only 60 golfers, I should add, there are some very, very long shots in this thing. And yes. So just keep in mind that it, you know, again, technically 60, but really I kind of handicapped this at more of like 50, 45, something like that. So I'll see if you guys agree as we get into all this, but no shocker, Scottie Scheffler is your short shot. You can actually find him at 4-1 out there right now at one of the books. So be sure BetMGM has him at 4-1. Xander Schauffele is as high as 6-1 over at DraftKings. Rory McIlroy, 8.5-1, 11 on Jon Rahm, 11 on Colin Morikawa, 14 on Ludvig Åberg, and then everybody else 20-1 or longer in all of this. So boys, Wes, I'll kick things off with you since you already wrote the preview article over on VSiN.com. And so, by the way, guys, if you do want to go in and check out what Wes has to say about all of this stuff, you can check that out over at VSiN.com. But Wes, did you do anything different at all as you were heading into the beginning of handicapping this, or did you just treat this like any other tournament?
By and large, the latter, treated it like any other tournament. I didn't really do like a lot of stat modeling per se, because you mentioned this is kind of a diverse field. The players range from, I believe, number one, which is Scottie Scheffler, to, I believe, 378. So you're getting guys that are on different tours here. You're getting guys that are on the PGA, the DP World, LIV, the Asian Tour, the Sunshine Tour in South Africa. So, you know, I didn't really do a ton of modeling. I look for stuff in context from a stat standpoint because, you know, you got to keep it in the fairway here. There is some thick cuts of rough that are back that weren't here at the 2018 Ryder Cup. So intermediate 2.5, and then the thick stuff goes to close to 5 inches. Very narrow fairways here. So 28-yard average width throughout Le Golf National. So got to keep it in the fairway. I know that's not breaking news here, but there's a lot of like water on this course too that you don't typically get on many European courses. So this is a little bit of a mix of like a links course because it has the pot bunkers in the middle of the fairways, but it also has a lot of water. Like it's an American style course, like you're playing a resort kind of in Florida. So you have a lot of water here. So, you know, there's some stats you could look at context, but I didn't really model. This is kind of a week, man, where maybe you go with a little bit of gut.
Kelly, I know you will be playing golf in Florida here in just a little bit. I'm sure you'll feel just like you're playing in the Olympics as you're down there in Florida here in a couple
obviously.
Of days.
Obviously, yes, yeah. Yes, yeah, yeah.
And I'm with sure the same skill level as well.
Sure. Yeah, obviously that as well. Yes, I think I'm going on another vacation where a hurricane's possibly hitting me. I'm getting really good at picking those spots. Yeah,
good stuff. The airline's been doing well with not canceling flights too and all things like that here lately. So good on you.
I was really hoping I'd be on the back end of that, yeah. But yeah, now let's see if that comes. Into play.
That'll be fun. So what about you? Did you treat this any differently than any other tournament, or did you do something a little wacky?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I think from a normal handicapping process, a lot of what Wes brought up, there were some stats that I think are important. I think they can give you some overall guidance to, you know, to the type of player of that you should be looking at, how they've been performing. But yeah, this is a little bit more of a gut feel sort of thing. And I think when I end up talking about people that I bet on, nobody's going to be really surprised by some of the names that they hear. But, you know, I think it's going to be a good event. I mean, I do think this is going to be some of the best Olympic golf we've seen, you know, probably ever. I mean, it was obviously we had Brazil where they had to make a course out of nothing for the first time where we saw golf. And then you're talking about playing, you know, around a pandemic, over in Tokyo. And now we're here in France, you know, on a course that sees a lot of golf. on the DP World Tour. You do have a large chunk of this field that has played this golf course at one point or another. Might not be, you know, they might not have seen it a ton, but a lot of these guys have seen this course.
What's wrong, Kelly?
I have no idea.
What happened? We didn't lose you or anything.
I don't know. It just froze up on my end. That was weird. Okay.
Yeah, all of a sudden you were okay.
Okay. God, it just froze up. My screen froze up. It was weird.
All right, so let's just let's clap it back in and just have Aramis do a quick little choppy chop on that.
Yeah, sorry about that. So you do have a lot of these guys that have seen this course before, whether, you know, it's one time or a couple times. I do think that's interesting. I think Ryder Cup experience here, there's, you know, not as many guys, right? Like none of the American guys, right, were on that team, I believe, is what I saw. So that's going to be interesting. I think from where I really found this intriguing to dig into from a betting perspective, it's just kind of, you know, Matt, as you kind of were naming off the top, right, where it's a 60-player field, no cut, stroke play, Thursday through Sunday. It sounds a lot like we've seen on the PGA Tour this year, like with the signature events and stuff like that. But the tail end of this field is nothing like the tail end of a field that you're getting in a signature event on the PGA Tour. So I do think from it, just an overall odds perspective, I think it kind of messed with my head a little bit. Like my first look at the board, was kind of thinking, oh, maybe there's some value a little bit more this week in that mid-range area where you do, maybe you got some guys like, Hideki Matsuyama. I'll just use it as an example because, you know, I've brought him up way too many times on this podcast in the past year. That's lost. But, you know, 35-1. Okay. In this small of a field, maybe that's an intriguing number on a guy that you can win. And it's a long number on this small of a field. I think as I went more into handicapping this event, though, and I did put a couple bets in over the weekend just because I thought of numbers that were going to move. But as I got more deeper into handicapping this, I think there's more value just at the top of the board. Honestly, I think you jumped up with the Scheffler 4-1. I think if anybody wants to bet Scotty Scheffler 4-1 and use arguments of where his odds have been in past events, I can't push back on that.
No, I mean, it kind of comes down to the deal for me that I feel that him and Xander are properly priced in this. And so it does make it difficult for me. I only have four bets in right now. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to play Scotty and Xander. Those of the four bets, they aren't currently any of those, but I'm going to have exposure to the two best players in the world at numbers that I think are fairly disrespectful considering the field that they're up against here in this one. So I have to figure out how exactly I want to attack it. As for me, I did model, but I did it. So shout out to our guy, Rick Gaiman, regular on the network, does have all the stats from all the different tours out there. So you can at least hodgepodge together some sort of model that not like a typical tournament where we do, where I say like, oh, well, this person is higher in the model than the odds dictate, so that's why I'm going to bet. Like, not that, but at least to give me an idea to point me in the right direction to who to look at a little bit further and look at a little bit deeper. And so that's kind of how I use the modeling stuff this week. I only ran one version. I did a baseline of 32 rounds, and then I went in. And the other thing that is pretty cool about the model stuff over at Rick Rungood is you can blend the model to where you can factor in also, like, even though the overall basis of the model is 32 rounds, I can still weight in like the last 24, or the last 12, a little bit heavier into the model. And so while I use 32, which is 8 or 9 tournaments, depending on whether guys got cut or not, it gives me the opportunity to also factor in a little bit more recency bias into some of the categories that I think are a little bit more important there too. And so again, just one version of the model, and it wasn't this guy's here, so it definitely is a bet. It's more of a, oh, this guy's here, I need to look into this a little bit further. Why is this guy as high as he is? And does it make sense for me to bet him at kind of where we are with all of this? Wes, I talked a little bit, like you said, about the course. It's definitely going to be tough. It's definitely tight fairways. With that, though, sometimes, like we say, it can actually bring the pack a little bit closer together, because if it doesn't separate us from driving distance and everybody's going to be kind of playing from the same area, then we talk about approach a lot here on this podcast. Obviously, I mean, if you're closer to the hole, you're more likely to put the putt in. That being said, now it really is kind of like an iron contest in some sense, in some fashion, because if everybody's playing from the same general area and there's no advantage to being longer or no penalty for being much shorter, then now we really are kind of like, hey, man, who is going to put their irons closer to the damn pin and give themselves a better opportunity to make a putt?
Yeah, and to your question, I will go ahead and just give a brief rundown here. Par 71, 71, 74, so not exactly a long course. This is regularly featured, by the way, on the DP World Tour. They have the Open de France over there. 11 under par has been the average winning score the last 10 Opens that they have had over here. The greens are relatively large, about 7,500 square feet, bent poa mix. So you have these big greens, even though you have very narrow fairways, but you got big targets to hit to. One of the differences, and you're talking about leveling out the playing field, I think maybe that could happen here in terms of the green speed. If you remember the Ryder Cup in 2018, which of course the home side gets to set up the course as they want. So these greens were slow. They were like 10, 10 and a half on the stimp, and now they're going to be about 12. So that's about average speed. That's not like super fast, but it's faster than normal. And plus they've had a lot of rain the early part of the year over there in Paris. So this is going to be soft course. So to your point, Matt, in terms of proximity and getting it closer to the hole, that's going to matter because you're not going to have a lot of bounce on these approach shots necessarily because these greens are going to be so soft. So, you know, that's basically the layout of the course. You have 10 holes where you have water in play, six on the back nine, 15, 16, and 18, by the way, all have water guarding the approach shot. So they want an exciting finish and they could very well get it here.
Yeah. Going to be super, super fun to watch. I often say that it's West Coast, best coast for sports viewing, but except when it's in other countries, and when it's in other countries, like golf's going to start at like 3 o'clock in the morning here for us over here. So not the greatest viewing deal for that. Yeah. Trust me, y'all roll your eyes out there on the East Coast. When I say this, tell me after you live out here and you can watch Sunday night football and you still have time to go do stuff. And like, you can still go about your life and all that. Like West Coast, best coast for sports, but except when it's in other countries. When it's in other countries, you guys do get the leg up on all that, and you're definitely going to get the leg up here as we do Olympic golf. All right, guys, so since we didn't really go heavily into the modeling and all the things like that, we might as well just kind of get into the plays and talk a little bit more about this, and maybe we can go a little bit more in-depth with the guys that we're in on. So, Kelly, I know you were really digging in pretty hard this morning on all of this. So what ended up catching your attention, and then what did you start to put into the account?
Yeah, I was digging in. Didn't end up coming away with nearly as much as I thought I would, but or I guess I hoped I would. I think just overall, stats and what you're looking at, you guys broke it down with accuracy off the tee being a premium here. You've heard comments from a lot of guys that have played this course in the past, we a lot of guys were even going less than driver. So your point about, everybody kind of hitting it from the same spot. I think if you are looking at numbers or modeling at home, definitely keep that in mind. You're looking for fairway finders here, and there might be some big drivers in this field, but even those guys are probably taking less than that on a lot of these holes. So I think that's important. Obviously, as you, Wes, you just hit on, approach is going to be big. Putting it close to the pin on these big greens is big. I did look at, just kind of three putt avoidance and that type of stuff too, because I think that all matters when you get into these bigger type greens. So, plugged in all that. Didn't end up adding any outrights to the card. What I did was I made a couple bets on Sunday as things were ending. And yes, numbers have moved a little bit, but I've said it on this podcast, I think for the past like 6 weeks, Colin Morikawa is just going to be a bet for me until I think he wins. He's the best player on the planet right now. That hasn't won this year. It just feels like it's coming. We're still talking about T16 being his worst finish since the Valero in early April. So I had bet him outright. I saw a 14-1 here in town over the weekend. I was like, I don't think this is going to get any longer than this. So I bet him 14-1. I think there's still 12-1s out there on him. That would still be a bet for me. And then I would say the only, only bet that's kind of near regular size for me in a PGA Tour event is Morikawa top 10. Like I play Morikawa top 20 -135, and that is a pretty substantial bet for me. I will say that. And then the other guy was, Yeah, I was high on him in the Open. I want to say all three of us had him at the Open, maybe just me and Wes. It was John Rahm. And I think just knowing that those guys, the LIV guys, have basically been in Europe since the Open. And we'd been talking about Rahm and his play on LIV and kind of hanging and living in that top 10 area, but not winning yet. Finally breaks through this weekend with a win. As soon as I saw that coming on Sunday, I put a bet in on him at 12-1. I don't know that I'd go and bet it, you know, if he's sub 10-1. I shop around. He's 10-1 at DraftKings right now. But I have seen him get down into single digits at certain shops. So
11, about the best number you're going to find out there right now.
Okay.
Yeah, like widely available rest of country stuff.
Yeah, it was one of those that I knew it was going to crash after he won that LIV event and headed into the Olympics this week. So those are my only two outrights. I bet them both on Sunday. I didn't end up adding anybody else today because as I was talking about and as you kind of brought up, Matt, I think the more I dug into it, it just became more apparent that if anything, I would just be looking top of the board and it would be Scheffler-Shoffley considerations were really the only two I was even considering outright. But at 12-1 and a 14-1, I'm going to leave my outright card like that. So then top 10 on Morikawa. And then a top 10, I did play Alex Noren. I know there's been a lot of conversation about him this week. Odds shortening on him. He is a guy who's won at this course before. Saw this note from Rick Gaiman too, over his 23 rounds at the course, over two strokes gained is like second best for guys that have played at this course before. I don't know how much you can really draw off with the course history with it being a lot of it being so far back in his career, but obviously this is a guy who's played great golf all season long too. So I played a top 10 on him at plus 160 in a ties payout market. Found that interesting as well this week when I was shopping around. There are going to be a lot of different markets you're going to see. You're going to see outright winner. You're going to see medalist. Like, you're going to see like top three finish. You're going to see your normal top five, top 10, top 20s at some shops. Just price shop, because there was a couple different ones that surprised me a little bit. My next guy was one of them, Corey Connors. I bet him at a top 10 at 2-1. Yeah, the scrambling around the green still a concern, but the putter's even gotten a little better recently. He's kind of been living in that top 20 range, T25 at the Open, T10 at the Scottish Open, T27 at the Travelers, T9 at the U.S. Open. It's been coming on here. So played a top 10 on him at 2-1 in a ties pay in full. And then I played a plus 150 on him in a dead heat shop for a top 20. Just the pricing seemed to be a little off on that to me. So wasn't expecting to go down that route, but I saw that number, ended up betting it. So
I want to point this out while you're talking about these markets in general. So again, the numbers that you see guys this week are not going to look as enticing as usual, but remember, it is it's only a 60 person field. And then also if you're betting a guy that is even halfway decent, remember, even though it's technically 60 golfers, it's more like 50 golfers, and it might even
there's
be
also no cut.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, exactly. Further chance for them to come back, and like, you know, even if they have a bad round, all those different things like that, where the cream could rise to the top. But really, again, just I want you to think about this before you go into this, like, none of these prices are worth it. Well, you know, again, you're asking for a top 20 out of a guy against a top 20 might actually be more like a top half finish, right? Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it could be closer to that than maybe it is anything else. So just, Kelly, just wanted to point that, because like, people are going to hear like, wow, 150 for a 20 and blah, blah, blah. So it's like, yeah, but you know, there are 10 to 15 guys in this field that are just there to say they played in the Olympics. You know, yeah. They don't have a real shot at contending in this thing.
Yeah, totally. It's a great point. And that's where, I mean, really when I'm talking, you know, like outright card, I think the more I was digging into this, more I was realizing the value was kind of at the top of the board. Yet, I think there's, I mean, that ended up being my whole card, but I do think, like, if you're looking at top 10s, top 20s, I think there's actually a fair amount of value in that market because of everything you just said, Matt. Even if you're betting at a worse price than you're used to seeing on these guys, I think that top 20 market probably has got a lot of value on it with some guys this week.
Wes, as you headed into navigating through all of this, what did you start to do when you were putting your card together?
Yeah, I was just, you know, looking like for stats and context. Guys have been hitting the ball well, guys that have obviously been in very good form, because when you look at the previous Olympics, we don't really have much to go on. We have two different Olympics to go on. Both of the winners have been on the short price side. Justin Rose was 12-1 when he won in Rio in 2016. Xander Schauffele was 9-1 when he won in Tokyo. What was supposed to be 2020 ended up being 2021. But you do get some guys that are unpredictable that do get up there. Look, we had Rory Sabatini and CT Pan on the medal stand in Tokyo last time out. Not much of a shocker in Rio when we had Rose, Stenson, and Kuchar. All those guys were really playing good golf at the time back in 2016. So, yeah, look, there can always be like a real long bomb, I think, that can make the medal stand here. And look, there's certainly plenty of candidates when you look at the 60 players and you look at their rankings. So, you know, you could take a shot. That might be for a placement market deal. Now, keep in mind, there's only 60 players there, so you're not getting the usual good prices that you're getting just because less of the field. So, yeah, I didn't really go too crazy here in terms of going down the board. One kind of longish shot, but I'll start at the top. And John Rahm, 11-1 still out there. So he didn't really get shortened all that much. But look, I think him winning last week actually took kind of a weight off his back, because he left for live and not just with the money, but I think he thought he was going to be the impetus for, you know, hey, let's get some movement toward an actual merger and bringing this whole thing together. That, of course, has not happened yet. So he went out there. He hasn't won. He played poorly in the majors, like, with the exception of the Open, where he ended up finishing top 10. He was just on the horrible end of the weather draw. But, you know, came out and won last week at Live UK. And I think the motivation is there. Motivation's for all these guys. It should be. It's the Olympic Games. But obviously, he takes that special motivation because he's representing his country. And, you know, Seve Ballesteros, how competitive he was in all these international events. So I think Rahm, look, this could maybe salvage a season if he could go ahead and win this gold medal here. And then another guy who has not yet won this season, but has certainly had his chances, Kelly just mentioned him, Colin Morikawa, winless in 2024, third at the Masters, fourth at the PGA, a couple other top four finishes in his last six starts. Never has played, I believe, at Le Golf National. Wasn't on that Ryder Cup team and never has played the French Open on the DP World Tour, but he can get acclimated. Remember, he won on debut at the Open Championship in 2021. Was part of that seven-man playoff that CT Pan won for the bronze medal over there in Tokyo. So just missing out on the medals, I think he could go well here. And then Tommy Fleetwood, 22-1, actually does have a win on this course. 2017 won the French Open. He was also part, if you remember, the duo Mollywood with him and Francesco Molinari that, you know, were at the 2018 Ryder Cup that never got beat by Team USA. I think he went 4-1 overall and Molinari went 5-0. Yeah, he is playing, by the way, with a heavy heart this week, as are all the British athletes. I think there was, of course, the tragic event on Monday in his hometown of Southport, England, which I won't go into here. You can read up on it. Very, very tragic and very sad event. But Tommy Fleetwood, I expect, you know, he could go well here at 22-1. And then another guy who won on this course, 40-1, Alexander Norén, for representing Sweden, who won here in 2018. That's what got him on that Ryder Cup team that year, where he went 2-1 in his three matches. He's on form, 10th at the Scottish, 13th at the Open Championship, a guy that can certainly keep it in the fairway, a guy that short game is pretty darn good, and that's what it could come down to, a putting contest here. So Alex Norén, 40-1. The one kind of long-ish shot that I did play, I played Benny Ahn at 66-1. Of course, people are very familiar with the South Korean deal and the extra motivation here. Benny Ahn and Tom Kim, by the way, are the two representing South Korea here in the Olympic Games. You're subject to that two-year military obligation unless you win sporting medals in international competition like the Olympic Games. I think Sun Jae-im and Siwoo Kim were medalists at the Asian Games last year, so they get to forego that military service. And then a little bit of Olympic history here. And sometimes I like to play a little narrative street in these type events because that's what the Olympics are about. It's not just about competition. Why do people watch these things in droves? Because everybody has a story and everybody loves a storyline. And Benny Ahn certainly has a very unique one. His father actually won a bronze medal for China in the table tennis doubles at the 88 Olympic Games, while his mother also representing South Korea on home soil in 1988, won a silver in the doubles and a bronze in the singles for table tennis. So both of his parents are Olympic medalists. So, you know, the son can, you know, live up to the parent standards here, perhaps. And he's played solid golf this year. He's a guy that is, you know, started on DP World Tour, certainly has played this event. So I thought Benny On was worth the go at 66-1. I did consider Guido Migliozzi, who you can get at triple digits, who also has won on this course and who won earlier this year for us on the DP World Tour over in the Netherlands at the KLM. I did consider him, but only 60 players. I don't want to go all that deep. I might have a couple placements and a couple matchups, but that's it.
Do you think that Benny On's parents are disappointed he didn't follow in their footsteps to the great table tennis glory?
Well, you don't know that he didn't try. He just like he might not have been any good.
I'm making guesses. You're right. Right. Yeah,
he might not have been any good. Like he couldn't paddle with him. You know, like he just couldn't do it. He's like,
I've been watching some of this table tennis, and you got to be pretty darn good. Watching it for the Olympic Games. I'm like, man, our American team, we don't have Forrest Gump on the ping pong team, unfortunately. We might be a medal contender, but alas, that's not to be.
I am getting in my own head, boys, about this tournament, though. Like if there's shops where you can, like, parlay top 40s and stuff, like, I know, like, these prices are going to be gross, but, like, like, I don't know. Matt, you broke it down well. Like, there's 60 guys in this field. There's really, like, 45 guys in this field. Like, I don't know. Like, I think there's some interesting betting opportunities here, and I don't know that I'm fully seeing them yet.
Yeah, with like the different qualification this year than it was in 2020, which I guess, you know, was 2021. Like, I kind of threw out the fact that there were a couple of bombs that did make it in 2021 because like there were only 27 top 100 players in the field in 2021, right? Mm. And now that they limited the amount of people that you can have, whatever, there's 35 in this one, right? In the top 100 as far as this field goes, and so it's just a little bit deeper of a field this year and with the qualifications and stuff that they were doing back in 2021, which was like basically the top 15 got in. And then after that, you could have two per country and then that was it. And then it was basically just like trickling down to countries. And it's like, oh, well, you don't have anyone left. So then you get to throw someone in there and then you know, you get to throw someone in there and stuff. And so it got like, it was super, super watered down. So it was even worse. It was even weaker of a field than we have this year. So like I kind of threw that out and I did stick a little bit more towards the top of the board. It's a little bit chalky. That being said, Wes, you bring up Guido and I did bet Guido, but I bet Guido not to win it, but I bet just like a top end performance of him. Like I bet a top 10 and a top five, because if you kind of look at him, he is your traditional boom or bust dude where it's like you go back and you kind of look at his season so far and it's like cut T16. Cut, second outright, T24, T8, outright win, cut, T31. So it's like, he's not the dude. It's like, it seems like when you're getting the best of him, he's really good. And when you're getting the worst of him, great. He's getting cut, which I know this is a no cut event, but that means he'll just be finishing like in the, you know, last or something, whatever, which is, it's fine. So I don't think he's your top 40 bet or your top 30 bet, maybe not even a top 20 bet. It's kind of like if you get his best game, he's probably going to be like on the top of the leaderboard. And if you get his worst, then he's just going to be way down at the bottom. So for me, I kind of am going to play the poles here and play the extremes. And so I went ahead and took him a 10 and a 5. Model really liked him. That's what made me kind of dig into him a little bit further from that. I only have two outrights on the card. I played Tom Kim and listen, I'm not in love with it. I'll fully admit, like I'm not in love with it, but it's the same deal of kind of like, hey, look, if they're all playing from the same area, and people are going to be playing with lots of irons and stuff. We all know the story with Tom Kim. Do I think the win equity for him against a Scotty, against a Colin, whatever is indicative of his kind of 22-1 that you can get out there in the market right now? I don't know. We have to play the odds that are in front of us, you know, and it's kind of like, so if we're going to look down the board a little bit, I think that he's about as good of a look as anybody else. And I think the one that really stood out to me when it comes to the, okay, proven winner, can get hot, only needing to run hot for four, can play good on the tough courses. So I played Hideki. You can find 40.
There you go.
You can You can
good
buy
example.
You know, like, you can play 40-1. Like, I mean, you can still find 40-1 out there in the market right now on Hideki. And it's like, look, is his form great? No. Like, also, but like, every time, Wes, guys, how many times last year or even over the last 2 years we've been doing this, did we say, is his form good? No, that's why I got to be off of it. And then he goes out in the top 10s in event, right?
Exactly.
Like, he's just that guy where it's kind of like,
every time I don't,
I like form in golfers, like, except for Hideki. Like, he's like the one exception to the rule.
Because it seems like it's put out there, like, he's injured, not going to play the pro-am in this event. And then it's like, oh crap, we got to bet against him in matchups or not bet him. And he's up there on the leaderboard.
Where the hell did he win earlier this year? You know how many times I bet him this year? I didn't bet him when he won. Like, yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what's happening. I bet him so many times this year.
And honestly, since I looked this morning, I actually got a worse number because I just refreshed and there's a 45 out there right now on Hideki Matsuyama. I don't know if it'll be there by the time you guys listen to this, but, you know, again, in a short field,
it's going to be amazing.
I mean, listen, dude, in a short field, if there's anyone that maybe if he just runs pure that can really go and compete with Scotty and Colin and Scotty and Xander, and then maybe even a Colin, Ludwig, Rory. I think it's probably Hideki, right? I mean, like, it's probably Hideki. And so I think at that number, it's just a little bit disrespectful. So,
Kelly, he won at the Genesis earlier this year when he shot that 62 when I had Will Zalatoris, one of my mini runner-ups this year.
There we go. So, like, this is where... Okay, like, let's go back to Hideki and use him as an example. And these are just odds that you just don't see. Like this is where this event's screwing with my brain a little bit because it's just so different from what we can handicap on a week-to-week basis when it comes to the odds. So he's 45-1, right, to win this event. And his top 20 price is -150. So they're like, what are the odds that the guy, you know, the guy's going to fit? The book's telling you he's going to finish top 20 or he's a favorite to finish inside the top 20. But then what are the real odds that you have no shot heading into Sunday with him if he's in a top 20 like position? Yeah, you know, it's just I think it does tell you something a little bit about where Scheffler and Schauffele are kind of at compared to everybody else. But it is a little wild with some of these guys. You can bet a 45-1 outright on a guy that's got a -150 price to finish top 20.
Yeah, so that's kind of like the deal for me that I'm going to – you know what I should actually point out as I just because we're – since we are giving information to everyone here, I just looked. I guess DraftKings joined the party. They are doing including ties now.
Yeah, they've been posting up that market like randomly, I think. Like, I feel like I've seen it like two or three other times this year, like for some of the majors.
So it is an including ties out there over at DraftKings, which typically has not been that for that market. So the other bets that I have in the account right now, I looked at guys that I'm talking that I think have a pretty high floor, and this bet isn't for everyone, you know, and I totally get that, but you know, a top 20 bet is something that is in a 60 player field. And again, we talk about that. It's not really even 60 true players. It's going to be a tough price to swallow. So, but I'm going to play top 20 on Sepp Straka. It's, I mean, you got to lay it. It's minus like 135, minus 140 on it, but I really like the baseline for him. I don't know if the win equity in this field against this high end of a top end is there, but I feel pretty confident in him finishing in the top third of this field. And again, if we think it's not really 60 players, then let's call it finishing, you know, inside the top 20 in a field of 50. I feel pretty confident about that with the way that he's look, guys, we talk about dudes that find the fairway. And so he's going to find the fairway. He's in the top five in every single driving category that we're looking at for this tournament, the stuff that we're looking for. And I don't think the win equity's there. But a top 20, laying the juice. I know it sucks, but it just kind of like is what it is. And the other one for me, I played a top 10 on Shane Lowry. Same type of deal. There was just, he finished high in that little blended model thing that I did. I went in and kind of looked at him like, hey, what's going on with Lowry? And it's kind of like the same deal that we're talking about with some of these other guys. Like when he peaks, he's going to play really, really well. And then when he's bad, then okay, it is what it is. Like, I don't want my guy that I'm betting a top 10 to like finish 18th anyway, right? Or like 21st anyway. I mean, like, I want him to be in the mix or just be out of the mix. And if you kind of look at Lowry, he's that dude. Like, he can go T4 and 3 outright, like we've seen a 6th outright at the Open. We've seen a T9 the week before that at the Travel League. So he has that PGA T6. He has that upside. He also has the outright 49 and the T47 and the T64. And that's in his repertoire as well. And so that's why I'm not like I'm not like a top 20 guy on him. I'm not really, I'm like hey, he's a top 10 bet for me in this type of field, or you just pass again. In my personal opinion, I think you get like the peak Lowry, or you get a dude who's probably going to be towards the bottom of the leaderboard. So that's how I tackled it this week. Pretty short card for me, but one that I feel fairly confident in. I said, as a disclaimer again, I will figure out a way to have some sort of exposure to Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele. I don't know how that is, be it in some crazy market, some whatever, or if I just have to suck it up and bet them outright. But I'm not going into this tournament naked to the two best players that have proven that they are the two best players in the world this year.
Yeah, I'm surprised I can't find it. I was just shopping around. No, I can't find any shop that's letting me parlay top 20. So that's I think that probably makes sense. but I was hoping someone would let me do that. I'm a little surprised I'm not seeing that nobody really has listed just a nationality to win or medal sort of thing. I'm not really seeing those markets, but I did see.
There are some nationality props. I know DK has them. I'm guessing a couple others.
They're the regular ones. FanDuel, they're just they're just top South American and stuff. I meant what country is going to win gold, that sort of thing, right? Because I wanted to compare it to DraftKings has a triple chance up.
Kelly, I hate to call you a liar, but I just went to this top 20, including ties market, over at DraftKings, and I just clicked on Scotty, Xander, Rory, Colin, and it gave me a price of minus 143 to
there you go. DraftKings then. The DraftKings is the way to go. Sorry, yeah. I was being selfish and looking in town.
Yeah. So I mean, just for rest of country, then, let's talk to the rest of country here. That is an option. If you kind of want to just have a fun, a fun bet, right? A fun sweat type deal.
Yeah, the one I was going to bring up was look, if you just kind of want to be a little patriotic about this, but you also think you like Scheffler, Schauffele, and Morikawa, you could bet the triple chance at DraftKings. That plays plus 130 on one of those three to win. I like all three of them. That's a good shot. Feels fair to me. Mm-hmm. But that's the book then, DraftKings.
Yeah, so there you go.
I think there's some parlays you might like. I was just looking stations here in town. It's got minus 350 on Morikawa. I think if I wasn't going to a wedding in Miami this weekend, I'd probably bet that and just sweat that out all weekend. I don't feel like sweating that out though while I'm on vacation.
Hey Wes, I want to kick this to you real quick before we get out of here. We didn't mention Rory McIlroy, right? We didn't mention Ludwig. We didn't mention Joaquin Niemann, Victor Hovland. These are all guys that have short odds here on the board. I know we didn't really model this week, so we're going more towards gut. Did your gut just not lean you towards those dudes?
I considered Rory. By the way, I think Rory, Scotty, and Ludwig are the first round pairing. They did release the pairings, the threesomes for the 60 players earlier today, and they got one of the featured pairings. Rory was preparing over at St. Andrews before coming here to Paris. Was not there at the Olympic ceremony. Shane Lowry was, of course, the flag bearer for Ireland in the ceremony last Friday. But look, he was part of that bronze medal playoff that eventually CT Pan won. He was in it. Morikawa was in it. A couple others, Paul Casey. They were all in that playoff for the bronze. So, look, I think Rory takes the Olympics seriously and to represent his country. So he could certainly win. Niemann, it seems like he's cooled off a little bit from that hot form earlier in the year. Certainly. You don't have to be married to recent form necessarily and could go here. But yeah, I did not end up playing those guys. And then Ludwig actually does have one appearance here. I think when he was still an amateur, when he was still a college player, I think he finished 7th here a few years ago. So he at least does have some experience on this track.
I can tell you something, guys, about Morikawa that was at least a little bit scary for me. And I love his game and I love whatever. He's playing with Pavone. And so I don't know if the French fans are going to be rowdy and heckle and whatever and all the different things like that and everything, but he's playing with Pavone. And so it's going to be a massive gallery, and it is going to be maybe hostile for him there as well. Call. So just something to point out, right? Like just something to point out.
All right. So I found the bet. How do you guys like this bet? Scheffler, Schauffele. This is really calling your shot here. Scheffler, Schauffele, Morikawa, Tom Kim, Shane Lowry, Alex Noren, Corey Connors, top 20 parlay. That is, yes, seven guys to finish in the top 20. Ty's paying full plus 732.
Yeah, see, look, that's Ty's paying full, though. So, I mean, like, it could actually be 27 guys.
That's a good point. Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Over 7-1 on that? I don't hate that.
Hey, look at that. You know, look, that ain't bad.
You mentioned Tom Kim and Shane Lowry. Those were definitely two guys I was considering as well. So, that's why I bring them up.
Yes. Yeah. So, interesting stuff this week, though. And I'm pretty excited to watch, you know, the ass end of all these rounds, because I'm not going to be able to wake up and watch the front of the Kelly. I know you will not be, because you're going to party in Florida.
Yep.
Yeah. You're going to be watching replays.
Yep. Guessing I won't see much. Yep.
There's going to be a lot of replays in Kelly's future. Guys, if you want the full breakdown of the course and all the thoughts that Wes has, that's over on VSiN.com. So be sure and take advantage of a little special we're running right now as well. Early bird, get you everything we do now through the Super Bowl. It's only $175 over there at VSiN.com, so be sure and take advantage of that. We do have the college football betting guide that's coming out on Thursday as well. So just a little bit of a bonus as you head into the NFL season, which that guide's already out and you can download whenever you become a VSiN Pro subscriber over there as well. If you haven't done so already, please go ahead, subscribe, rate, review. We do appreciate all of those, unless they're three or lower, and then keep them to yourself. We don't want anything to do with your 3-star, 2-star, 1-star ratings. Keep those to yourself. Be nice to us. 4 and 5 stars only, please. For Wes, for Kelly, I'm Matt. Good luck on all your Olympic golf bets.